We want to thank y'all for tuning in to Run Up the Numbers.
Every Monday at 8 a.m., and if you miss us in the morning, you can catch the replay in the afternoon at 2 p.m. and again at 8. You can also check out the shows archived over at thenumbers.fm. And for you early risers, every Monday morning at 6 a.m. on 107.1 X-Ray FM.
Make sure you're following us on all social media because we out here.
Yes.
Twitter, Facebook, Instagram,
yes.
House Party,
yes.
YouTube,
there.
Twitch, Black Planet. I know y'all talking about our OnlyFans. It's going crazy in there. MySpace, Tinder, catch us ticking on the TikTok and Google Plus.
In this episode, we'll be putting you up on official state that Oregon still hasn't reached its Omicron peak, and former state representative Akasha Lawrence Spence has announced her city council run.
And the feds are auctioning off KN95 masks.
Crazy.
And early results in the Newberry School Board recall votes are too close to call.
Let's get right into it. Former state rep Akasha Lawrence Spence of the Democratic Party in Portland is running for the Portland City Council, challenging Commissioner Dan Ryan as reported by the Willamette Week last Tuesday. Quote, I'm running for Portland City Council because I see both an urgent need and an opportunity to make sure that our city's recovery is just, centering those who have been most impacted by the health and economic crisis of the last 2 years. I have proven firsthand what we can accomplish when our actions are moral, our resolve is strong, and our policies put people first, Lawrence Spence said in the statement. Akasha's campaign announcement described her as a small business owner and activist, and said if elected, she would focus on community resilience and an equitable recovery, prioritizing housing and houselessness, community safety, transportation, and climate justice. Lawrence Spence was appointed to the Oregon House to fill the District 36 seat vacated when former House Majority Leader Jennifer Williamson resigned in late 2019 to run for Secretary of State. She served for nearly half of 2020, finishing out Williamson's term, but did not run for re-election to the seat. Akasha announced in April that she was interested in filling the District 18 seat vacated by State Senator Jenny Burdick, who was appointed by Governor Kate Brown to the Northwest Power and Conservation Council, and stepped down at the end of the 2021 legislative session. Lawrence Spence's city council campaign announcement said she will continue to seek the District 18 appointment, but with the intention of only finishing out the current term. She noted that the redistricting process will change the geographical boundaries of the district in 2022, placing her outside of it. Have you had the chance to meet Akasha?
Yeah. Actually, I wanted to pop-ups.
Yeah. She spoke at the Juneteenth pop-up we did in Old Town. Really, really dope.
Yeah.
I met her before that DJ Passports. We were shooting one of his sessions over at the old studio on X-Ray.
Okay.
It was really, really interesting to hear her perspective. Just hearing her story, how she got there, how she got involved with politics, and her like really giving me the understanding of, you know, slow walking some of the issues. Like you and I have some of the same conversations with the work that you're doing. Like,
yeah,
we know what we want the end result to be. But for a lot of these things that we want to get accomplished, it's a process, and you got to slow walk it, and you got to go through different steps, not to necessarily like hide what you want to get done, but it's just the nature of politics. It's a lot of push and pull. And she did a really good job explaining that.
There's a phrase that's been living in my head rent free since reading it, and it was, "You can't microwave change. It's got to be slow cooked."
Okay.
And that has been bouncing around in a lot of ways.
Yeah. Right?
And that's just with that. I feel like in the context of government, it's a lot of things that, yeah, the idea of this is what we want the end result to be. So this should be how it is. But there's processes.
Yeah.
There's processes. And a lot of times if you change one thing, several things change with it that a lot of times people on the outside are not aware of how that works.
It's true.
So having to think those steps ahead where the frustrations kick in from the average person not understanding that, and they're frustrated with, you know, a person that they believe can make the decisions. And it's like, yeah, these
there's other processes and a domino effect that can happen, and I'm aware of that. So why I'm taking my time to make sure that we don't knock over this third domino, which is actually going to have a much larger negative right. effect.
Right.
But yeah.
Yeah.
Shout out her.
Yes.
Her continued glow ups.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. Man, that really did give me something to think about, because you're right. When we vote for leaders and get them in position, it's like, all right, now just get it done.
Yeah.
Everything you campaigned on, all these policies, all these problems you said you were going to fix, you're in there. Do it.
Yeah.
All right, you're and now. Can't microwave. Yeah, you can't microwave the change that we actually want and need.
Yeah. I like
them analogy.
Yes, yes. Again, rent free. It's in my head.
And now y'all have it.
Well, the U.S. government is looking to unload more than 1 million N95 and KN95 masks. Most are still in cardboard boxes, shrink wrap, and stored on pallets. Mm. Nuts. The federal government is trying to get rid of more than 1 million new, unexpired N95 and KN95 masks by putting them up for government surplus auction. Despite strong demand for the high-quality masks during the Omicron variant surge, the General Services Administration, or GSA, which regularly holds auctions on surplus federal assets, has more than a dozen separate listings in January for masks and protective face coverings. It's not clear why the U.S. government is looking to unload the masks. Most are still in cardboard boxes, shrink-wrapped, and stored on pallets. All the masks up for bid on the GSA auction website appear to come from the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs. A spokesperson for Veterans Affairs explains that local VA medical centers evaluate their own inventory to determine current and future clinical needs and storage capacity. Quote, "These are sitting in shrink-wrapped boxes on pallets, ready to go and ready to be used, and it is in the middle of a pandemic where the public needs them."
Right.
Earlier this month, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention acknowledged that cloth masks do not offer as much protection as N95 or KN95 respirators, namely because they can filter out 95% of all airborne particles. Demand for quality masks has only increased as infections with the highly contagious Omicron variant continue to soar. Last Wednesday, the Biden administration announced it will make 400 million N95 masks available to Americans for free starting next week. The masks, which are coming from the Strategic National Stockpile, will be made available through local pharmacies and community health centers.
So they talked about this. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, like, as somebody that's been trying to order, I grabbed a couple N95 masks, and having a beard makes it a little tricky for the...
Super
for the way it sits on your face. But I was looking online trying to find some black joints, and craziness of how much a box of 25 cost in my cart, came back the next day, had doubled in price, and the date of when it was going to show up was like, yeah. No, this is a good long while. I'm just trying to find something here. But then to know it's just a warehouse with the pallets of them.
You want to hear something super funny?
What's up?
Now, go back online. Now that there's this situation going on where the government's going to start sending some out, now go back online and look at the price. Yeah. Yeah. I definitely went and ordered 100 for the office. It's in black. So we in there stylish for anybody. We out here, you know, black on black, KN95. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Isn't that? They out here playing games, man. They out here
playing games. What? Oh, no. Listeners, please take the time to go do the same thing, because I am so happy right now that I did not, because I was leaning on, okay, $60, cool.
Now look at them. Available. The one, listen, I ordered some yesterday. They'll be at the office tomorrow. Yeah.
This is nuts.
Now, I will say this. Sure, they're going to make 400 million masks available, but they're making it available through pharmacies and community health centers. And I think what, so with the tests, you have to go online and fill out some form to request the test.
Yeah.
When it was time for Trump to send those COVID relief checks out, they found you wherever you were. I don't think it makes sense during a health crisis to require people who may not have internet access to go online and request some tests. I think it makes a lot more sense to just to send tests out and send them to community-based organizations that are already dealing with these communities, dealing with these people, citizens who may not have access. And, you know, just like, it just seems like they're overthinking a lot of this. And with the pharmacies, I think it's going to like Walgreens and CVS's. What is the contract? Yeah. What's the distribution contract that y'all can't just put these things in the mail because you got the United Postal Service? I just don't get it.
I ain't gonna lie. When I first saw the links popping up, I thought it was a scam.
Yeah, a lot of people did.
I was like, why is the post office? That was what the first thing that popped in my head. Why is the post office sending the test? Especially as I have been on the hunt of trying to find just to have some.
Right.
And I didn't jump on the wave a few months ago like I should have before everything started picking back up and the surge went. And then coming across the shenanigans and realizing these are nowhere to be found. And then that email pops up and it was like, wait, is this a phishing attempt? Like, what's happening here?
Old school fishing. Nobody
but also that. How fast that spread. That was the other thing.
Yeah.
How quickly that link in that conversation spread. Because I saw people that never talk about things sharing the link.
Dog, that thing spread like wildfire.
Yeah. That was something interesting to me.
Yeah. I was getting texts from a bunch of people. Like,
yeah.
Yeah. All over the place. So, I mean, again, for those of us that have access, that's great. For those of us that don't, need a better solution there. So, last week's school board recall election is still too close to call over in Newburgh. They wildin'. Voters have decided whether to recall Newburgh School Board Vice Chair Brian Shannon and Board Chair Dave Brown, who as part of the board's conservative majority have led headline-making decisions such as a ban on political displays in classrooms and firing the district superintendent without cause. Ballots were due last Tuesday. Early results showed voters leaning against both recall efforts by small margins, and the percentages remain virtually unchanged as of January 20th. However, it may take up to 21 days for the results to be officially certified, with more ballots still being counted. Brown and Shannon comprise one half of the 7-member board's conservative majority, which voted in August to ban teachers from displaying Black Lives Matter and LGBTQ pride signs on district school campuses. The policy was later replaced with a ban on all political displays. They had to, you know, identify the most important ones and then open it up to all.
Yeah, those other ones too.
Yeah. Show them other ones. We'll start with these two. The policies generated significant public pushback, including a lawsuit filed by the ACLU of Oregon in December. The board also made headlines in November when it abruptly fired former Newburgh Superintendent Joe Morlock without cause. The recall campaign leaders have also alleged that Brown and Shannon violated public meeting laws by holding partial board meetings in private and hiring an outside attorney before giving the full board a chance to vote on it. Brown and Shannon have described the political display ban as an effort to maintain a politically neutral learning environment in schools. Recall proponents have misinterpreted a board-approved policy, which simply assures that teachers cannot abuse their position of trust to push their own political views on students while performing their official duties, Shannon wrote in a statement for the ballot. Brown also defended the ban in a recent interview with KGW, calling accusations of systemic racism in the district overblown, and said he thought the recall campaigns were a waste of taxpayer money. The recalls are totally from the other side. They shouldn't have done it, he said. I think elections speak for themselves, and that we should stand by elections.
I mean, that last line is nuts. Especially coming from a a conservative.
Exactly. You already know, bro. Like, you know where he was January 6th. You know. Talking about just standing by a y'all do the
most. That is nuts.
Doing the most.
Yeah. Yeah, I remember when these stories, you know, were first hidden. And of course, they went for the Black Lives Matter and the LGBTQ, any pride, anything prideful.
Yeah.
And then, of course, that like, ooh, we got to circle back to make this be an all-inclusive thing.
Yeah, yeah.
We know what it is. And anyone from the area, you ever took a little drive through Newburgh on your way to the coast?
Yeah.
You already know what time it is without having to actually stop for anything there. You know what time it is.
Oh. It's just wild. It's so wild. There's Newburgh is always in the news, constantly in the news for foolishness like this.
For foolishness like this, it's always the same type. Context wise, so same the
superintendent
stuff.
That they dismissed and when they fired, he didn't enforce the ban. That's what happened. He didn't enforce the ban, and it was like, oh word, you're fired.
Get him up out of here.
You're fired.
Get him up out of here.
Wow. I mean, you want to keep, like, think about what they're saying here. We want to be able to keep conversations. We want to be able to keep political conversations out of school. Uh-huh. Literally where you're supposed to learn about it. Like, you learn about politics, political structure. Like, that's social studies.
Well, in their defense.
Okay. I love it.
You're not supposed to learn how to pick a side.
Mm-hmm.
You're not supposed to learn how to enact or use what you're learning.
Gotcha.
We're just telling you stuff.
Uh-huh. Okay.
We're just telling you stuff.
Well, I mean, you know, that makes sense. It does not. They ain't here a while.
And there's still, there's a group of people, too, that keep waving this loser flag. Like, it's the flag of the side that lost.
Yeah, the Confederacy, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. I don't get it. Why do you want to remind us that y'all lost?
Yeah, there's...
You want to keep bringing that up?
There's some colors that I won't fly. And that's the...
Yeah! We're over it. Why aren't you? What are you doing?
Ah! Man.
So, I want to give a quick shout out before we get this next story. Shout out to Jen Thielander, loyal listener. Ken,
hey.
He said she heard our story. We were talking about not having a clear understanding of what's happening in these defense budgets. And if they had just passed out the pamphlet or a binder letting us know what we were getting for our money, it'd be a different story.
Yeah.
Are we getting the missiles with the guns on them or the guns with the missiles on them? Like, what is, you know? Jen says she was dying and that she is going to put together a pamphlet for us.
Yes. Yes.
The latest stealth bombers and whatever else.
So does it come with the Z-71 package or not? So... Do these tanks come with the Z-71 package or not?
Can the tank crab walk? Ron, he got that new truck at crab walks. I need to know if these tanks
are crab walking. I need to know.
Is there a moon roof? That's what I need to know. Sure. I saw that commercial. I was like, I'm sorry, what is this truck doing?
Which is great for parallel parking.
Bruh. I'm sold on electric vehicle. There it is.
Well, the latest OHSU forecast predicts that we won't reach our Omicron peak until February.
Yeah.
Oregon State Health Officer and epidemiologist Dr. Dean Seidlinger discussed the expected trajectory of the Omicron wave at a press conference Friday morning, touching on issues like hospitalization rates, testing availability, and the OHA's ongoing development of a long-term mask rule. The conference comes as Oregon continues to experience an unprecedented surge in cases due to the highly contagious Omicron variant, which began driving case rates up in late December. Prior to Omicron, the highest single-day tally was 3,207 new cases on August 27, at the peak of the Delta wave. The current daily record is 10,428 cases on January 6, and the seven-day average stood at 7,895 daily cases as of last Thursday. Oregon also reported single-day tallies above 10,000 on January 14th and January 20th. Sheesh. Yeah. Hospitalizations have also been trending steadily upward, with 981 current COVID-related hospitalizations statewide, according to the OHA. Omicron infections tend to be less severe, but the sheer number of cases means even a lower rate of severe illnesses could still break hospitalization records. Oregon Health and Science University released an updated forecast last Thursday that projected the Omicron wave would peak with 1,550 people hospitalized on February 1st. The OHA recently began the process of enacting a long-term replacement for the state's indoor masking rule because the existing order is temporary and set to expire in early February. Oregon law prohibits the agency from extending a temporary rule beyond 180 days unless it goes through the process of making the rule permanent. But permanent in this case doesn't mean forever, just until hospitalizations and other indicators recede to safe levels. Oregon ordered 6 million at-home testing kits in December, each of which contains two tests. The state has received just under 2 million of those kits, with another 600,000 expected in the coming days. The initial batches were sent to hospitals, K-12 school districts, and other partner agencies that need to maintain daily testing programs in order to stay open. And OHA has retained about 500,000 kits on hand to resupply those agencies. The state wants to prioritize getting tests to hospitals and schools, as well as the geographic and demographic groups that have been hardest hit by COVID or have more barriers to access testing. Oregonian households can now order tests from the federal government. That's a lot of stuff. And it's also interesting that the current daily record was on January 6th.
Bruh. Man, 10K is wild.
A lot of it.
Yeah. Yeah, seriously. But I'm not mad at conversations around a permanent mask mandate. I'm not mad about that. Like, I remember as soon as I got outside, yanking the joint off, like, acting like I was underwater, you know, just falling. And now, like, I definitely think weather plays a part. I'd be outside with it just on. Like, my face warm. Especially if it's just a short walk from one building to the next. Going the safe way where I got to put it right back on. Take it off. Yeah.
Again, I've not been, after finding the mask that worked for my face, I think that's actually, let me step back. Now knowing like the KN95 and N95 masks, if they could make a large, like an XL version,
right,
that would be awesome. I've done looking and haven't came across anything that actually says it is. But double masking at least, with having the joint on and then throwing something a little doper on top. I've talked about many times how much I enjoy just having my mouth open. So I don't have any problem with this rule, because there'd be a lot going on under the mask that it's not weird, because I'm able to move my lips while I'm thinking out loud, like, or thinking to myself, or just weird jaw exercises while I'm working. It's a thing. But I'm definitely interested in how that part is going to play out, because I think about places. I think about the drive to Seattle. I take the drive up, you know, fairly often, and I usually stop at the same gas station on the way up, because they have some chicken tenders there that.
Okay.
Great, you know, but anyways, everyone there, this is in, you know, little country space. And I'm usually feel like I'm being looked at as a weirdo for walking in with my mask. And I feel like they, through the whole thing, were kind of in the, we don't do the mask around here. But it's been consistently through these past couple of years of walking through there and nobody having the stuff. The workers have started having them. I have noticed that more recent, but they didn't even have them at one point. Yeah, and so I think about places like that where it's wondering if they did hit. I mean, of course, that's not here in Oregon and so on, but in the idea of, if this extends or what places will make this a thing, what places won't. Because if we're only doing it, in low in state, like at statewide level, and this isn't a national thing, then it's kind of,
Yes, defeating the purpose.
yeah,
Yeah,
yeah.
everybody needs to be on the same page. Everybody
Yeah.
needs to be on the same. I just saw that they're banning flights from certain countries now. I think China was one of them for like 4 months, 2 to 4 months or something. Like, we got to start thinking that way. Like, you got to shut things down, make sure everyone's on the same page, everyone's taking the same precautions. We're going to keep
It's,
getting mutation and variant after variant.
yeah, and that's it's definitely coming with it. And I mean, it's not, as we know, like it's not a thing that's going to be eradicated, right? It's going to keep morphing into whatever, mutating into whatever different form. But in the space of, I guess, until we get a better understanding, we're still a year and a half into this. There's still a lot that we're still, or yikes, I said a year and a half. We're 2 years into this. 2 years into this, and there's still a lot that's being figured out, right? And so hopefully there is, we'll get in the next year or 2 year that we have a more complete understanding of what this is and what this mutations, or possibly having the things to combat this in a different type of way. But right now we're not there.
No, we are not.
So I'm
We
gonna go
certainly
ahead.
are not.
I'm gonna be a, what do they call it? Sheeple? I'm gonna be a sheep and just listen to the people. I mean, I have my questions like everyone. There's certain things that, a lot of mixture of information that sometimes be like, But then there's people that I actually trust their understanding, and not, and from a high level, not just like the homie. But there's so being able to have some of that back and forth, puts me, of course, at a certain level of ease. But I'm still gonna have to go with the overwhelming data that says this is actually helpful, and will eliminate you from being out for the count.
Exactly. We have support from OHA and REACH, MoCo. So, there's some ads we have running right now on the air and also through our social media platforms, advertising, go ahead and get vaxxed, go ahead and get tested. And it's always interesting to see the comments we get, especially on Facebook. For
Oh,
those
yeah.
ads, they just go wild. And somebody
It's
was like, what do you say? People are getting vaccinated and still getting still contracting COVID. It doesn't work. And then like there was a post we saw last week where someone, it was either a post or something we saw on Twitter, and it was like a friend of mine is triple vaxxed and got COVID. And I'm like, since this thing is triple vaxxed, you're just caught up on your, just
yeah.
caught up on your boosters. So
That's
it's not like three layers of drywall or
yeah.
something. It's not what's going on. Did you get, if you got vaxxed, if you got your flu vaccine every year for the last 3 years, you're not triple vaxxed.
Yeah, not at all. That is hilarious.
Like, what is wrong with people, y'all?
Another thing that I do want to point out, that one of our listeners clearly that pays a lot of attention. I don't be doing too much ticking on the talk personally, but on a page then was talking about the wonderful numbers events going on at the art museum, and I had a listener chime in and asking, "Where's the numbers? Can I give them the numbers TikTok page?" To which I respond, "I'm not for sure where." I'll check back. And then it was like, came back and was like, "Oh, well, maybe I'm, but I'm pretty sure on the beginning of each episode it says, catch us ticking on the talk." And I was like, "You're right." We false flagging.
It was a false flag operation. We out here
Gotcha.
working on our OnlyFans. Yeah, gotcha. OnlyFans is the priority. Gotcha.
But I was cracking up when I got that, like, okay, you're
Oh,
right.
man. I Maybe we'll have to speak to some of our younger colleagues and see if they'd be interested in TikTok and for the sake of the numbers.
Yes, Lord.
I don't have any dances left with me. I think I'm good.
With that, make sure y'all check in with us every Monday at 8 a.m., 2 p.m., and 8 p.m. again as we sit down and run up the numbers.
Yay, yay. Run up the numbers, hosted by Ken Jones and DJ Ambush. Music by C's.
All this for 50. Yes, sir.
Oh, man.